Thank you, Stephanie. Last week, I preached to you from the Sermon on the Mount about the Beatitudes, which laid out the attitudes and the priorities of Christ-minded people. Jesus reminds would-be disciples that we are now also the salt and light of the world. In other words, how disciples of Christ are to interface with society. Here, Jesus is not so much telling us what to think as how to act. In short, how to go public with our faith. Now, some of us may have a hard time with this very idea of public faith. And some of that begins because of past experiences. As you know, I grew up a Baptist, and so I was trained to do witnessing at an early age so I could share my faith, my Christian faith, and my faith in Christ with others. And then once I was trained, I was sent out to knock on doors, even to buttonhole people in malls and on the beach. And I went, but with a lot of fear and trepidation. And my approach to sharing with people that I didn't know was very low-key. The slightest resistance they offered, and I was out of there. However, some of the people I was paired with to go out, they were so aggressive that their witness embarrassed me at times. Now, such displays of faith are not our problem. We don't have to worry about being too aggressive in public with our faith or embarrassing ourselves or the church. We tend to have the opposite problem and dilemma. We seldom or not often enough go public with our faith to the point that few people in our society know who we are and what we profess. When I tell folks about our progressive brand of Christianity in our church, I often hear the comment, "Well, I didn't know those kind of churches existed." That's an indictment, folks, on progressive Christians, that we aren't public enough. I believe Jesus was a lot like us. I know he had a public ministry, and there were times he preached and taught to vast throngs of people. But I believe he was fairly introverted and quite a private person. He cautioned disciples about praying in public or practicing your religion for show and attention. But he also said, "You are the salt and the light of the world, and light is meant to shine, and salt is meant to flavor." So how do we do this? How do we shine? How do we flavor? Well, church people have been trying to figure this out for centuries, how they stand in the world. You know, early on, it was the monastic life that was considered the highest ideal to be a Christian. But few people today follow those paths. I mean, how many of us as parents say to our children, "Now you know one of your options is to go into a monastery." Yet, you can withdraw from the world without going to a monastery. And in fact, religion and even church life has been used often for people to escape the world. But for serious disciples of Christ, we are called to be salt. And I know today, salt doesn't have a good name, does it? Salt is an unhealthy additive to food that raises our blood pressure and doctors tell us to avoid. But in Jesus' day, the purpose of salt on the earth was to have a preserving presence in the world. You know, we all grew up, most of us here, with refrigeration, so we're prone to miss the meaning of Jesus saying about salt. But if you'll go back with me to where my mom was born in rural North Carolina during the Great Depression, on my grandfather's farm that we would often visit as children, he lived 9 miles from town, but it was a whole nother world. And in the springtime, little piglets were born. And all through the summer, they were fed slop. And these little piglets grew up to be heavy hogs. And when the first cold weather spell came, they would have a hog kill. I attended one of those as a young teenager. All day long, the men and the women and the children would work at killing and preserving hogs. And toward the end of the day, my grandfather would lay out the shoulders and the hams and the sides. And with great care, he would take salt, brown sugar, and spices. He would mix them together, and he would rub that salty mix into the meat. He would do this for hours. And then the meat was hung in the smokehouse. And in a few days, Granddad would return and he would repeat that process. He was doing a task that people had done for centuries. He was keeping the meat from the sure process of decay. Now let me apply this gritty, down-to-earth parable for us. Our world has death and decay within it. There is greed, indifference, injustices, economic exploitation. It happens. Commerce, education, politics, these are all good things and they're necessary for life, but they can be corrupted. And where there is untruth or injustice, someone has to speak the truth. Someone has to do justice. And this is putting salt to the rot. And according to Jesus, this is part of our assignment in the world. In an article about Eleanor Roosevelt years ago, columnist Ellen Goodman once wrote, "She became a great lady not because she was the first lady, but because she found purpose in life despite a lot of pain and disappointment. As a child, she had to wear a brace on her back. She was called an ugly duckling by her own mother, can you imagine? And she became an orphan at age 10. As a wife, she cared for her husband Franklin when he was, stricken by polio. But after 10 years of marriage and 6 children, she saw him fall in love with another woman. And despite all of this, she got involved in programs to help the poor. She supported civil rights before civil rights was popular. She promoted women to positions of power in government, and she worked for human rights through the United Nations. At her passing, Arthur Schlesinger paid this tribute to her. Her life was both ordeal and fulfillment. It combined stoicism and vulnerability, frustration and accomplishment, sadness and happiness. And the sum of it is that she was one soul whose example and good works placed her among those who are the salt of the earth." Amen. There's a second idea in our text from the Sermon on the Mount today. Jesus also said that we are the light of the world. Now, at first thought, this teaching could give Christians a big head. Perhaps it's part of the root of the superiority complex that Christianity has had throughout history, that we are the best and the right religion. So allow me to do a little interpretation, and you can decide if you think I'm right or not. Basic to the early Jesus movement was the idea that the Spirit of Christ, the Spirit that was in Jesus, also lives in us. And therefore, we can be transformed from being selfish people to being more Christ-like people. But this kind of goodness has to be nurtured. We may be the light of the world, but our light is always grounded in the light of the world. So that if we remember that we're not the source of the light, that's going to temper our egos a lot as we set about to share our own light. Remember that Jesus also said on the Sermon on the Mount, "No one lights a lamp and puts it under a bowl. Instead, you put it on a lampstand where it can give light to everyone in the house." After all, what good is light if it's hidden? The point of light is to be seen and used. I know that some of us are reluctant to go public with our witness. But the reason God put light in us is because there's still too much darkness in the world. Light is meant to be shared. So when we withhold ourselves from the contest between good and evil, between light and darkness, then we fail to dispel that portion of the darkness that my light was meant to penetrate. I know, especially as progressive Christians who take seriously the teachings of Jesus, we are called upon to get involved. Believe me, though, I understand the hesitation. Despite being a very public figure myself, I still struggle with this. Fairly regularly, someone will call me, and they want to enlist my support for some just cause. And I wholeheartedly support the cause. But when they say, we want you to come speak or do something public, sometimes I'm reluctant. Why? Well, because I know that involvement in justice issues may mean that you do go public with your faith, and there can be reaction. I could give you many examples, but I was thinking this week of years ago, I spoke at a peace rally in the city of Orange against the death penalty. I only spoke for 2 minutes. There were dozens of other speakers. But I was the one that got quoted in the LA Times. And therefore, I was the one that got all the negative feedback. So taking a stand on controversial issues can be scary. And yes, there's people that are very unhealthy out there. And we know that. So when the call comes to be out there on hot topics, I sometimes find myself, too, a reluctant disciple out of fear. But folks, fear is the opposite of faith. There's a great temptation to be secret disciples. Join the church. Get involved in the church life because it's wonderful. But publicly declaring who we are and what we stand for. But if we are disciples of Christ and members of the church only for personal privilege, then we are perverting what it means to be a disciple of Christ. Life has much larger purposes for us. And although the causes we get involved in can be very different, we're all called because we're all gifted. We all are salt and light. So make no mistake about it. We are called to public faith. Our presence is needed, folks, in public schools, in the office, in our neighborhoods, and with some kind of identification with the poor, the oppressed, and those who are hurting. Jesus was point blank about our mission. Feed the hungry. Clothe the naked. Give drink to the thirsty. Welcome the stranger. Care for the sick. Visit the prisoner. Set captives free. You are salt. You are light. Back in 2005, after we had voted to be an open and affirming congregation to people of all sexual orientations and gender identities, and after we had gone through, to be honest, a little bit of a bruising process on marriage equality, that year, our church membership stood at its lowest point in the past 20 years. People noticed. Attendance was down, fewer children and youth were involved. But then something happened. In response to Prop 8, remember that initiative against marriage equality that was financed primarily by the Catholic Church and the Mormon Church? Our cabinet, after much discussion, took a courageous vote to post a message against Prop 8 on our church sign on Newport Avenue, where more than 50,000 of our neighbors pass by every day. Then our open and affirming ministry called for us to do a public protest right here on our property against Prop 8 on Sunday morning, and we did. NBC News showed up. They interviewed me, surprisingly, and they made us the lead story on the evening news that night. A year later, we hosted the Orange County premiere of the Broadway play Corpus Christi, which blended the true life story of a gay man who grew up in Corpus Christi, Texas, in the homophobic 50s, with the life and ministry of Jesus, which is why some called it the Gay Jesus Play. When it opened on Broadway in New York, there were bomb threats. We held it here, the Orange County premiere, and thanks to some gay members of our church who were very good at marketing, we packed this sanctuary for 2 shows. But we also had protesters out on the sidewalks with their bullhorns. We received a ton of negative emails and phone calls, and we even had to hire an undercover police officer. Another year later, we were asked to participate in a documentary film about the lives of transgender people. A Hollywood producer brought in a crew, a film crew, right here in our worship service, and he filmed our church, a witness to inclusion and justice. And that film ended up going all over the world, a witness for transgender people. And during all those years I just told you about, of us being out there, the number of visitors to our church, the membership, and the attendance went up. I have tried to give you and us some encouragement and motivation to keep on taking the faith public. For it's never enough just to sing or say we are the light of the world. What we need are recruits. So may we all be willing to be enlisted in the good cause.